The world's best don't get results alone, and now neither do you, no matter when, where, or what you're working on. Introducing Pit Stop's AI Avatar Marketplace. Think of it like Spotify, but for personal and professional growth. Imagine instant access to digital versions of the world's top coaches, each one trained on their unique methods, experience, and coaching style. This isn't just another chatbot. Every Pit Stop AI avatar is powered by real coach insights, their notes, their podcasts, and what they've learned from real sessions. It's a truly personalized coaching companion, so much smarter and more relevant than generic tools like ChatGPT. Whether you want to level up in business, build new habits, manage stress, or boost your confidence, you're not just getting advice, you're getting it directly from the playbook of proven high achievers, all at a fraction of the cost of traditional coaching and available 24/7 whenever you need that extra edge. Ready to find the coach that you need? Use Pit Stop as your launchpad for growth. Head to the link in the show notes and download the app now.
Welcome to Drive to Thrive, a Pit Stop podcast. My name is Sandy and I am your host. And this week I am joined by Ben Walker. Ben is a coach based in the United States, mainly focused on procrastination and how people can stop procrastinating and make the most of their time here and be as productive as possible. But as Ben discussed, it's not all about being productive. First of all, we got into why procrastination isn't laziness and why it's actually a trauma response if you're a bit of a perfectionist, an anxious overachiever. If that sounds like you, Ben talks about all the reasons why you procrastinate and how you can get over that, how you can stop feeling bad about the need to take rest, why play and having fun is the most important thing and that's what you should be doing first and why everything stems from that. We talked about time management versus decision management and why decision management and where you put your attention is actually more important than time overall. Overall, this was an amazing conversation with Ben Walker, some great insights into how we can improve ourselves and not procrastinate so much. It's definitely something we need to focus on a bit more in this world with smartphones in our pockets. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoy our conversation with Ben Walker. Procrastination isn't laziness. It's this trauma response of a perfectionist. Tell me what that means to you.
Yeah. So first off, the word trauma, it's used a lot and not always with, I think, the exact definition in mind. So first off, the thing about trauma is a trauma is an event that happens that leaves some sort of lasting impact. And actually, the direct translation from the Greek is a wound. So that's essentially what a trauma is. Something happened and you still feel pain. You still feel something around that injury. So for a perfectionist, doing something wrong is the worst possible thing because most perfectionists grew up being praised for their achievements, getting good grades, winning the game, those kinds of things. And then heaven forbid they get anything less than an A plus, than a perfect score. And then they're immediately punished. So they learn or they don't get the praise. That's probably the worst one is they don't get the praise that they're looking for, usually from their parents. So a perfectionist has grown up believing that if they're not perfect, then love will be withheld from them. Affection and attention will be withheld from them. And so then when a perfectionist comes up against something where they might mess up, they might not do it right, all of that conditioning comes in. And to avoid the discomfort of doing something and potentially failing, potentially being shamed, being put down for not doing the thing, they avoid it. And that's when, suddenly the dishes are really important to do. And, oh, there's this email. There's all these emails that I've been dreading answering, but I guess I'll do those. And you end up doing any other kind of meaningless, mindless task, except that thing that would really move the needle, but is also really scary to do. So that's what I mean by it's the trauma response of a perfectionist because it's a perfectionist's way of avoiding the fear and the pain of messing something up.
I imagine a lot of people listening to this are probably resonate and probably fall into that camp of, you know, Chris Williamson, a podcaster, he calls them the insecure overachievers, you know, and you're essentially always going and trying to be perfect at something and trying to work on something. How do we go and do that and be satisfied with doing it for ourselves rather than doing it because we're trying to chase validation or chase, as you said, that admiration, that high when someone's like, yeah, well done. Is there anything we can do, you know, with the coaching that you've given people, or is there a way around feeling like that where you can just be satisfied you've done it because you've done the thing rather than looking for that validation afterwards, if that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first thing is make sure it's a thing that you actually want to do. But one of the first things I do with my clients is called a should detox, because those insecure high achievers are doing that thing because they think they should. And that should creates shame and makes it infinitely harder to do the thing. But in the should detox, there's a step where we change it to I want to. And if the answer is no to that, if your body says no, don't do it. That wasn't the thing for you. And you were most likely doing it to get some sort of validation or praise from somebody else. So that's the first step, is make sure you actually want to do it. Is this leading you down a path that you actually want to go on for you? Because then if it's actually for you and you actually want to do it, it doesn't matter what anyone else says. You don't need the praise, because the doing of the thing is the reward. That's why I've got this sticker everywhere. My motto is fun is the point. Because something fun is something you would do for the pure joy and silliness of doing it. There's no goal. There's no ulterior motive. You're not trying to learn anything. You're present, you're playful, and you're in flow. And then, you know, time flies by, and that thing that seemed really hard went so smoothly because you're having fun. Like actually experiencing fun and joy within yourself instead of being forced to do it or having the pressure to do it.
Yeah, we had a guy on the podcast a few weeks ago, an entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur called George Bettany, and he said very similar. He said, start where you play, you know, and I think so many people, when they are stuck and they're trying to figure out where to go, they naturally gravitate towards something that they feel is going to bring them the most, I guess, material success. You know, especially men, we're so focused on like making money or having this status. And actually, sometimes you're going to actually progress the furthest with something that you feel like you're enjoying, or that you, as you said, do for fun.
Yeah. Well, and two, that's when you get like that idea, the missing piece. It doesn't drop in when you're sitting there thinking, oh, what is the thing? What's the answer to this? It happens when you're out playing, and then suddenly, you know, you put together all of these unrelated things, and then boom, oh, there's the idea. Holy crap, I gotta go do something about this now. Because you actually allow space for the ideas to come in instead of forcing yourself to have them.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit more about procrastination. I think it's something that certainly a lot of people struggle with, myself included. You know, I'm not sitting here pretending I'm on my high horse. I definitely reach for my phone or, you know, anything else to try and stop me doing it. Me and my friends have a phrase. We say, do it, then it's done. And that's actually genuinely stopped me over the years from procrastinating. But why do you think we are struggling so much with procrastination? And what are some tips for people to kind of snap out of it and be able to get on with the tasks in front of them?
You know, the biggest reason we're struggling is a lot of people don't realize what procrastination actually is and the, like, what it's protecting you from. So people think it's, oh, I'm just lazy, I have bad time management, you know, I just can't get organized, I'm not motivated, things like that. And those are surface level problems. It's the same thing in the body. The pain isn't the problem. You know, if your elbow hurts, it's probably something with your shoulder, probably something with your back. That's what you got to look at. So most people are looking at the elbow, this pain of like, I can't do this thing. Why can't I just make myself do it? When, like how we started this podcast, what's actually happening is they're bumping up against a trauma response where this thing is actually like threatening them with the most existential dread than a human can experience. Because when most people are catastrophizing about all the things that could go wrong, that worst case scenario they're thinking about is some version of, if I mess this up, everyone's going to laugh at me, no one's going to love me anymore, and I'm going to die homeless and alone. And if we, you know, go back to even like cavemen, getting excommunicated from the tribe is a death sentence. That's the worst possible thing that can happen. So we're putting ourselves in these life or death scenarios, but not acknowledging that that's what it is. And we think it's just, oh, I just need to just do it. But it's really hard to just do something when unconsciously every part of your body is going, but we might like lose all our friends and die if this happens. So that's the thing, is procrastination is a much deeper issue than most people realize. So honestly, the first step is you've got to figure out, you know, where did you learn that the only way for me to get love, acknowledgement, and appreciation is to be perfect, to achieve at the highest level possible. That's the only way for me to be worth anything. That's the first thing you have to get to. And from there, it's a process of unlearning that belief, which is not true, and replacing that, really training a different way of being.
So with that in mind, then, is it almost about, because a lot of the times, you know, especially in today's world, you know, there's the whole like everything is so comfortable and life's never been easier for us. And, you know, it was like 100 years ago, people didn't even have hot water and all this. So, you know, in essence, our problems are smaller than they've ever been before. But for some reason, we're more worried about them than ever before. Do you think it's also just in terms of the procrastination thing, do you think this is something that we've always struggled with? Or do you think it's something that's come around because of the way that today's kind of society and culture is structured?
Yeah, you know, I do think it's the latter, that it's something that's become more and more prevalent. Because even you can look at because a lot of people who procrastinate a lot have either been diagnosed with ADHD, self-diagnosed with ADHD, or are borderline ADHD. And that is something that has had a massive increase in prevalence in the last couple years, few decades even. So I think it's one of those things where I've seen this meme on the internet a couple times. It's like, sorry I didn't answer your text message. I was trying to reconcile myself with the constant bombardment of stimulation with a brain that's designed to eat berries in a cave.
Oh yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah, because like biologically, we are the same as cavemen. But we've got all of these tools with all this crazy stimulation. And there's actually an author I really like, Yuval Noah Harari, says that humans are really good at making tools. We're really bad at using them responsibly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so, you know, you see, you know, people who like get so fat that they need a wheelchair. They're using this tool that we've created, the wheel. Oh, isn't that cool? But what about all the things that got them to the point where they have to use that? That's a problem. And now the fact that they're relying on that, they're not going to walk again, because they're not using the actual tools that they were given. And I mean, you see this even the study that came out about AI a month or so ago that showed that people who use AI for like coming up with their own ideas and writing things have like an immediate decrease in their cognitive abilities. Immediately. So
wow.
That's the thing. There's a lot of tools like social media, like cities, cars, computers, all of these things that we are really awesome. I love them. They're great. Cities, maybe less so, but everything else, they're awesome. And we don't use them in a mindful way where we're considering the big picture impact of using those tools. And the big picture impact becomes, you know, people who are so, so distracted that they can't sit still by themselves for 5 minutes. Like I travel a lot from different rock climbing spots to rock climbing spot. That means I'm often driving, you know, 600 miles in a day. And I love to do it in silence. I don't listen to podcasts. I sometimes do, but most of the time, no podcasts, no music, just me, my thoughts, and whatever I'm driving through. And I tell people that and they go, oh my God, that sounds terrifying. You mean I'd have to be alone with my thoughts? And that's why we have all of these things to distract you from the thoughts. But if you're a procrastinator, those thoughts are the thing that would actually lead you to the reason why you're procrastinating. And then you'd be able to stop. And then you'd be able to do the thing. But you keep distracting yourself because, you know, the everything is designed to make it really hard for you to be focused on anything else.
We'll get back to the episode in 1 minute. But first, I want to tell you about our app. Imagine having the same kind of support and coaching that top athletes and successful people rely on to reach their goals. That's what Pit Stop offers, a platform designed to help you build better habits, strengthen relationships, improve in your career and finances, as well as overcoming challenges like anxiety, addiction, or burnout. With Pit Stop, you're not just getting a coach, you're joining a community. You'll have access to one-on-one expert guidance, a cutting-edge habit tracker, smart journaling tools, and a constantly updated library of quick, actionable insights. It's everything you need to grow right at your fingertips. As a listener of this podcast, you can kickstart your journey with an exclusive 20% discount on your first 3 months of one-to-one coaching. Just use the code PODCAST when you sign up. Why wait for things to change? Take action and start your next chapter today.
I guess it all just comes down to discipline at the end of the day, isn't it? I know that's something that you've spoken about a lot. You know, the idea that it's almost counterintuitive, but the idea that actually discipline equals freedom, right? Because you think, when you think of discipline, you think of like, for me, my brain immediately goes to like, you know, the army, and you're told when to get up and you're told when to do this. But actually, if you're not in that situation, if you're just in, you know, I suppose normal life, like me and you, discipline actually does equal freedom, because it unlocks so many more options for you because you've managed to have that fortitude. So like you know, sitting in the car doing that, or if you've had the discipline to go to the gym for months on the end, you have the freedom to decide to travel and go rock climbing because you're able to do that. How much does that statement kind of resonate with you and sort of the work you've done as well?
You know, honestly, I used to be all about it, but I've become less of a fan of the word discipline.
Right.
Because, you know, I do think like worthy skill to have. And I think it works for a lot of people. It works for plenty of people. The way I see discipline expressed most of the time is, I got to force myself to do this thing that sucks.
Yeah.
Which there's a time for that. And that's not really sustainable to just spend your life forcing yourself to do things that suck. Mm. And that's why I hear so many people say, oh, I just got to be disciplined. I just got to be disciplined. But then as soon as they fall off one day, it all goes out the window because they weren't actually, you know, they didn't like it to begin with.
Yeah.
It made it harder for them. So I've shifted that to devotion. So for example, I devotedly warm up my whole body every day, whether I'm going to be driving all day, whether I'm going to be rock climbing all day, doesn't matter. Everything, every single part of my body, I warm up. And that's because I have a vision where my life goal is to be the oldest person to climb El Capitan in Yosemite National Park. I'd have to be 82. That's the goal. So I am devoted to that vision. So when I get up in the morning, I'm like, hell yeah, I'm the oldest man to climb El Capitan. Let's warm up these joints. And it's not about like, oh, I got to make myself do it. It's, I do it because I love it. I love how I feel after I do. I love how I feel while I'm doing it. Mm. And like that devotion is so strong that, like I was saying earlier, I want to do it. So I don't have to force myself in any way. And to the point now where it's become so routine that I hardly even think about it. I just roll up and I was like, ah, okay, let's find a sunny spot, breathe, move my body, and then I'm ready to go about the day. But all of that comes from like devotion to a vision for myself that is so inspiring that I don't even consider a different option. And I think that that's more sustainable than discipline and force.
Yeah. It's really interesting because you've kind of come at it from the other way. So a lot of the people I've spoken to, and kind of myself included, it's been very much like, think about it on the day-to-day level, not necessarily, you know, it's the classic journey, not the destination thing. But I guess for you, because it's something that you're so passionate about already, and you've got this, you've kind of essentially done that. And it sounds like you're already talking about yourself as if you are the oldest person to climb El Capitan. So you're essentially manifesting that into being and working backwards from that goal and going, right, these are the things I need to do on a day-to-day basis. And almost that fuels you. So as you said, yeah, it doesn't feel like discipline. It feels like devotion. And again, I think this comes down to the fact that you have a passion, like, and it's what so many men and so many women as well just lack that passion. You know, they lack something to be part of a tribe. You know, I know climbing is a very tight-knit community, you know, like you're part of that tribe and you're part of that thing, whereas so many people outside of their job don't have that, do they? You know, they don't have what you have with climbing.
Oh my gosh, that's huge. Huge. I mean, I even like, I have that here where like, honestly, there's some dudes over here playing hacky sack that I've been hanging out with that I met like 3 days ago, and I'm probably going to play hacky sack with them after this interview. And even where I have been living for the last 4 years, Bend, Oregon, I've got an incredible tight knit group of friends where like we have fun together. We party together and we lean on each other hard when we need to. Oh my gosh, I have put 90% of my weight on some of my friends, and they have risen to the occasion every time, and I've done the same for them. And that, honestly, that more than anything is like when I'm traveling, people are like, oh, you think you're going to move somewhere else? It's like, honestly, no. Because of that tribe, I couldn't picture myself putting down roots anywhere else, honestly, except Bend, Oregon. And yeah, like that tribal piece, the community is definitely missing. People are incredibly lonely because, gosh, I mean, for all kinds of reasons. We're all stuck in these freaking hand computers, you know, sucking our attention away from other people. Did you know that that's what a black mirror is?
Yeah. It's a black, black phone screen. Yeah.
I needed to take a nap after I found that out. Jeez. But yeah, I think the tribal aspect is huge. And I mean, along with that, because we're talking about like passion and vision. And oh yeah, that's because you said something that really jogged me. It was like the journey and the destination.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it's not about the journey, not about the destination. It's about the journey. And I think it can be both. It can be both. Like, because for me, I have a very specific destination that I'm working towards with climbing. And part of that is me basically living out of my car for a year, doing a lap of the United States and hitting all the different rock climbing spots for all the best times of year to be there. And that is so much fun. It's so much fun. I love it. And I'm having all of this fun along the path to being the oldest person to climb El Capitan. Like, actually, I had this disagreement once with a climbing partner because I was working towards a specific climbing grade and there was a specific progression of routes I was doing. And I was really focused on that. And he was like, ah, you and your freaking plan, man, like just climb and have fun. I was like, I am having fun. Like yes, I have a specific like pyramid of routes that I'm trying to do to get to this level. And climbing every single one of those is really, really fun. So I'm still enjoying it, even though I'm still enjoying the journey along with having a very specific destination that I'm aimed at.
It's also worth saying as well, the effects of you having this goal within the sport, within the passion that you have, that the benefits of that will be bleeding into all the other aspects of your life, I imagine, whether it's the physical fitness that you're gaining from doing that. The time, I imagine, you know, if you're halfway up the wall, you can't be checking Instagram and, you know, scrolling. You can't be doom scrolling when you're halfway up El Capitan. Like it's you know, well, maybe you can, I don't know. I watched Free Solo once, but my hands got too sweaty and I got too nervous. But so I don't know what it's like being up there, but you know, I imagine, and maybe you can correct me. And you know, for me, my thing is surfing and windsurfing, and it's the same thing. I can't take my phone in the water, you know, getting out and away from that. So, and those aspects bleed into my life. You know, I get into that flow state there and I go, right, how can I pull this into other aspects of my life? So when I am sat at my desk feeling overwhelmed, or even when I'm sat doing this and I start to, you know, my internal thing starts going like, who are you to be doing this podcast, Ryan? Who are you to be interviewing? You know, and I'm like, it's lovely for me to have that place to go back to. And I imagine it's the same for you with climbing. And like you said, I think also that is another thing that I just think so many people are missing. And I think a lot of it is down to fear, because they're scared of feeling judged for going and living in their car and climbing for the year, or feeling judged for looking stupid because you've never surfed before and you're going to look stupid in front of it. Or I want to go and play golf and actually, oh, but what if I can't do it? And the people behind me are getting frustrated, you know? And I think that holds a lot of people back from, you know, getting into something. Is that something that you've encountered both through your coaching of other people, but also yourself? And if so, what kind of advice do you have for people wanting to get started, where they feel like they found a tribe they want to get into, but they're nervous about taking those first steps?
Yeah. Oh, this is a great question. Because I experienced that all the time. I like the classic thing, even, you know, the watching these guys playing hacky sack is making me think of this. The first rule of hacky sack is you're not allowed to apologize.
No way.
Yeah, that's the first. That's the first rule of hacky sack. No apologizing. And I'll say too, like, don't be sorry, be sexy. Because yeah, people are like, they'll be climbing and maybe they're struggling on a route, and they've got to like hang there for a bit and figure out this move. Like, people are often apologizing, or they'll like not want to go out climbing because, I don't want to like slow everyone down. And the reality is that most of the time, all the climbers are like, nah, like, come on, this is fine. I'm happy to like belay you for as long as you need to get this route. And I think that the issue is most often people they're scared to do that because they're only thinking about themselves. It's very egoic. It's like, oh, what about me? How am I going to look? What are people going to say about me? What are they going to think about me, 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 me? And hello, being very self-conscious and social anxiety, because all you can think about is yourself. And I used to be like a shy wallflower, the kind of person who would just shut down in groups of people. And I remember working with a coach, we'd worked through some of that. And then I had an opportunity in a group, and I just watched myself shut down. And I was in it. I was watching myself do it. I was like, oh, dude, this is the thing. Come on. Like, be yourself, do it. But I just couldn't. And I said it to her, and she said, yeah, that's because you're putting all the attention on you. You're not putting the attention on any of them. So the next opportunity my favorite game to play is the curiosity game. I play that. That's pretty much what my coaching is based off of, is I'm a professional question asker. And then, but I paired that with the introduction game, where anyone I made eye contact with, I introduced myself and then started playing the curiosity game with them. And I immediately felt so much lighter. And a friend of mine said, yeah, dude, I don't know what happened, but you walked out of the room and like the whole energy of this party just shifted. And it was because I put my attention on the other people in the group instead of just thinking about myself. And that's where a lot of that comes from. That fear is because you're thinking about what other people are going to say about you instead of being present and having fun with the people around you. Because I've been in hacky sack circles where there's one person who is not very good and tends to drop it, and none of us care. Nobody in the circle cares. We're all playing and having fun. So it's the same thing for anything else that you're insecure about. You know, the dance class that you've wanted to take, the team you've wanted to join. Maybe you have wanted to try rock climbing. Everyone else wants you to be good at it.
Mm.
That's the thing. Like, I used to do musical theater, and the best advice I got for auditioning was, remember that it's in their best interest for you to be really good.
Yeah.
They all want you. Everyone behind that table wants you to be good because they want the best people for their show. So what if you walked into the room with that? These people all want me to be funny and interesting. They would be so happy for that to happen. And they're believing in me that I am. How much different would it be, every interaction, every new thing you try, if that was your mindset going into it? So yeah. focus on the people around you.
I love that. That's so a couple of years ago, I read a book called The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. It's all about kind of stoicism and stuff like that. And that's one of the main stories that resonates me. It was actually George Clooney. And when George Clooney was auditioning, you know, he was an upcoming actor. And he was, you know, trying to get auditions, and he kept getting no. And then he just decided one day, he was like, he kind of reframed it in his head of like, I don't want this part. Like, they want me. And as you said, that the people there auditioning, they are hoping that I'm the right person, because then their job's done. They don't have to worry about trying to employ someone anymore. And he went in and auditioned for that. And the first audition, he went in and kind of had that mindset. He got the job, and it was that show. I can't remember. It wasn't Grey's Anatomy. It was another like hospital show that
ER.
He was on. ER, that's it. Yeah, it was the audition for ER, and then he got that, and obviously now he's George Clooney. But it was really. I love that you kind of said that as well, and I think that is so important. Regular listeners of the podcast will be fed up of me talking about this, but I have a post-it note on the back of my bathroom door, and it says, "Nobody is thinking about you as much as you think they are." And actually, in a weird way, that sounds negative, but it's not, for all the reasons you've just said. It's super freeing. And you realize actually, like, if I feel like I look like shit and I feel rubbish, but I need to go to the supermarket and get some food and things, and I go there and I haven't made myself look nice, or, you know, if I'm, I don't know, you know, if you're just feeling, you know, bad, or you go to a new gym for the first time and you feel like everyone's looking at you, or, you know, for me, if surfing, like if I paddle out at a new place and there's a load of surfers in the water and they're looking at me and all this, I'm like, they might look at you once, but they're not thinking about you. They're thinking about themselves. We are all the main characters in our own story, and everybody else is a non-playable character. Like when you play a PlayStation game or whatever, and there's all these people in the background, that's what they are to you. And that's what you are to them as well. You know, and having that realization was so freeing. And it definitely helped me stop caring as much. And it made me take more chances. It really did. It helped me get rid of that procrastination, going back to the beginning, and helped me, you know, get stuck in and try new things.
That's beautiful.
You know, I think it's such a big thing. It is trying to stop worrying about, you know, what what the other people are thinking. But talk me through, we spent, you know, at the beginning, we talked about this idea of, you know, the anxious overachiever and the perfectionist. Not only is it, you know, as I said, worrying about getting the admiration from other people, but usually those people as well, and this is myself included, but like, how can we stop feeling bad, not just about not achieving, but also the idea of recognizing it's not lazy to have a day off, to take some rest, to make some time to go and climb or do something that you love doing? You know, how can we, what are some steps that people can take, you know, through your coaching, but also for yourself?
Yeah. Love this. The first thing is when it comes to relaxing, like sometimes I tell my clients, sometimes the most productive thing you can do is take a nap. You know, you're not doing anyone any favors by being burnt out and sleep deprived. That's not being a high achiever. That's burning out. So take a damn nap, y'all. But then too, with going out and having fun, doing things we love. And this is part of, you know, the societal narrative is fun is seen as like dessert. It's something extra that you get to do after all the actually important stuff is done. the reality is play and fun are vital for human like health, happiness, and development. There's actually been two studies that I think are very interesting. One showed that bears who played in the wild lived longer. And the other showed that most, they interviewed death row inmates, and most of them were not played with when they were kids. So that is how impactful fun is. It's not, it's, you know, it's as important as eating healthy food, drinking clean water, moving your body. Having fun is vital to be, you know, an aligned human being. You have to have that, because otherwise you go to like what I call bottom shelf fun, which is going out drinking or binging TV shows or scrolling on social media. It's like you're trying to have fun, but that's not really fun. It's you know, it might, it, you know, it's like a bottom shelf. It might be serving some sort of purpose of getting you to some sort of state, but it's not the same. It's not going to taste as good. It's not going to feel as good as the real thing. So, and that too, when it comes back around, is going to make you more productive. It's going to make it easier to do the things that are challenging that maybe you don't want to do. Actually, I had one client who, he's a dad. He's got, I think his oldest kid might be 12. I think he has three or four kids. And he was talking to me about, yeah, I'm trying to get them to like tidy up the house and everything, but all they want to do is like go outside and play. And I said, well, what if you played with them first and then went and tidied the house? And he was apprehensive about it. But the next call he gets called, I was like, damn it, Ben, it worked. We went and like had a super soaker fight out in the backyard, and then we came back and folded all the laundry together. And it was that simple of fill your cup first, play, enjoy your life, and then the tasks that are more grunt work, more tedious, are infinitely easier because your fun cup is full. So yeah, it's not lazy. It's not irresponsible. It's not frivolous to go have fun. It's vital. Vital. I mean, I can tell you, there is a marked difference in my overall like happiness when I'm rock climbing 2 to 3 times a week. It's night and day how much more joy I feel even doing things like writing Instagram posts and stuff like that. It's so much easier for me to do when my fun cup is already full. So like, go enjoy that thing. Take a nap when you need to. Read a fiction book. Read a fantasy book. Allow yourself to do those things that aren't directly in line with productivity, because it's not, it's going to be a non-linear thing where like taking an hour to read a fantasy book is actually going to give you exponentially more energy later for the thing that would be challenging and tedious. And it's not this like direct, I have to be productive all the way. It's I do a little thing over here and my productivity goes way up over here.
Yeah. It's even like, I mean, the irony is not lost on me of us doing, you know, this podcast and this being about productivity and things. But I've recently stepped back from listening to the, I was listening to a lot of, the productivity and the self-development podcast and all this, and convincing myself that that was leisure, you know, while I go for a walk every day and I convinced myself that that's leisure. But then recently my friends got me into a book series called Red Rising, which is about Mars and space and fantasy and all this. And like, I'm like, oh no, this is how I'm meant to feel after I go for my walk. Not like feeling like I've got to go and do more podcasts and write more Instagram posts and do this. And I'm very lucky. I love doing this for a living. It's amazing. But it really is amazing to also step outside my world and go somewhere completely different for an hour. You know, it's, yeah. So I love that you've said that as well. You made me feel a lot better about my choices, Ben. I like it.
I will enable you for fun any day, Sandy.
I love that. And you kind of, to wrap up before we go into the last section, you've kind of already spoken about it a little bit, but you know, in the work you've done, you've discussed kind of time management versus decision management, and why those two are kind of different. And can you talk me through, you know, from what you've said, decision management is far more important than time management, but we see so much content about how time is the, you know, the most valuable currency we have and everything like that. But why is it that we should focus more on our decision management over time management?
Yeah, it's because most people think they need time to make decisions. But the reality is when you're faced with a decision, most of the time your gut tells you immediately. You already know what the decision is. You already know the thing, the way that you should steer the ship. But and that is your intuition. Your gut, like coming from that voice is calm and logical and it's going to tell you the right thing to do. After you notice that, then all the other voices, the protecting voices, come in of like, oh, but what if I let everyone down? Everyone, they need me to make the right decision. Like, people are counting on me. What am I going to do? And the time is lost in all that like faffing around with all the self-doubting voices in your head. When really you knew the decision already. So it's decision management and it's also emotional management. That's kind of like a two-parter there, because you have to be able to manage the emotions that come up when a decision needs to be made. Because if either the decision is there and it's uncertain, you're like, I think this is the way, some things might go wrong, but I still think this is the way to do it. You know, your gut's going to get tight. You're going to feel like anxious and scared. And if you give into that, that drags out the decision-making process. And then you think, oh, I need better time management, when really you needed to be able to manage your emotions enough to be able to see the clear decision for what it is. And I would even say that there is a resource that's more valuable than time, and it's attention. Because I could get more done in one really focused hour than I can in 2 hours with distractions coming at me. I could do the same amount of work in half the time if I am focused and have all of my attention on that one thing. To me, that is way more important. And there's even Aldous Huxley's Island. I think that's what it's called. There's a bit where in school, they even say they're teaching the kids how to turn 5 minutes into an hour, because they're teaching the children in the school to have enough focus to get into a flow state where then time stops existing. So like that right there is why I think attention is so much more important than time. And when you can pay attention to your emotions and understand them, know where they're coming from, why they're coming, then the decisions are so much simpler. But it's the same thing as like people focus on the procrastination instead of the existential fear that's driving it. People think it's time, it's attention. That's why I think where it would be much more productive for people to focus instead of, let me take this time management course. Because that time management course, that's not going to help you with your fear of failure. That's not going to remove the pressure of other people's expectations, which is the real reason you're procrastinating. So it's just a Band-Aid. And it's just covering up the real problem, which is the fear, the expectations, the pressure that you put on yourself. That's what's really making you procrastinate. It's not your time management. It's not your discipline. It's not your laziness. It's you're terrified. And you have to be able to manage that to make a clear decision. And that can be done in seconds if you can have enough attention and pay enough attention to yourself.
When you say the paying attention to yourself, do you mean similar to what you said earlier about sitting in the car with no distractions? You know, is it simply a case of sitting with those feelings and asking yourself why you're procrastinating and what it is you're kind of really wanting in life?
Yeah, it's you know, there's a cognitive aspect of getting curious about the feelings, and there's also a more, what's the word? Less logical aspect, we'll go with. I'll find a better word for that someday soon.
Spiritual.
Of simply spiritual. Yeah, there we go. I like that. Where you're not even asking the feeling yet. You're just being with it. Okay, my solar plexus is really tight right now. Yeah, it's still tight. Okay. It's kind of like a yellowy color. I think it's a circle. And it's like pulsing. Okay. And just like being with that feeling. Because sometimes the feeling just needs to be felt. Like there's times, you know, where you might start crying. You don't even know why you're crying. But it feels really good afterwards. And that's because you actually felt the feeling all the way through. And like that's the other aspect of it, is being to allow that feeling to run its course and get out instead of being tamped down and hidden. Let the feeling do whatever the feeling needs to do to be expressed. And then it's a lot easier to go, okay, what was that about? Well, you've got it. You have to be in touch with your feelings enough to let what's the, I think it's a Joseph Campbell quote, that bliss is any feeling felt all the way through. Or it's something along those lines. But that, like, that's why I feel so good after a really good cry, is because you finally let all that out. Because if you don't, it festers and then shows up at, you know, you snapping at somebody who really didn't deserve it. And you go, oh man, why did I do that? It's because you need to cry, man. And you're not letting yourself. So yeah, being able to feel the feelings as well as have a conversation with the feelings about, you know, where, what are they afraid of? What are they trying to protect yourself from? Those two together is how you're able to like move through and manage those emotions.
Yeah, I love that. To finish up, Ben, we've got six quick-fire questions pertaining to the six different aspects of what we call the wheel of life. So you've got health, mindset, leisure, relationships, career, and finance. So six aspects that we believe you can kind of work on holistically to improve yourself. So we'll go one at a time, which is what we always recommend with it anyway. So first of all, health. What are three simple things that you do each day to improve your health?
I do a full body joint warm up every day without fail. I do that every day. I'm staring at screens all day. So I wear blue blocking glasses when I'm using any screen inside, no matter what time of day it is. Cause as soon as I can't stare at a screen for more than 5 minutes inside without my eyes stinging. And the other one, this one might not seem directly related to health, but I read a book before I go to bed instead of looking at a screen before I go to bed. That makes a huge difference. Like I have a lot of my coaching sessions turn into sleep hygiene sessions. And so I was, okay, what do you do before you go to bed? Oh, I watch Netflix. I scroll. It's like, so you're looking at a tiny little sun before you go to bed. How do you think that's impacting your sleep? And everything else. So yeah, I read a book before I go to bed.
What are you reading at the moment?
Right now I'm reading Taipan by James Cladwell. It's the sequel. It's the next book in his Asian saga after Shogun.
Oh, cool. Nice. Next up, mindset. What is one piece of advice that you would give to someone to improve their mental fitness?
Let me get up on my soapbox here real quick. This is a big one. Remove the words "I feel like" from your vocabulary and replace them with "I imagine." "I feel like" is the McDonald's of the English language, because, you know, we were just talking about feelings. When you say "I feel like," you're not actually talking about your feeling. You're telling a story about the feeling. So like, for example, Sandy, I feel like it's raining right now. You can see me. Is it raining?
No, it's not raining.
But those are my feelings, Sandy. Are you saying my feelings aren't valid? But it's not raining. You know? So what I was doing was imagining it raining. And that's the thing, is when you say I feel like, you're imagining something but talking as if it's true, and it's not necessarily. So that that alone, I tell my clients all the time, if you get nothing else from working with me but making that switch in your language, I feel like to I imagine, you will change your life. That is enough to change your life. Replace I feel like with I imagine. Please.
I love that. That's awesome. Off the soapbox now. I feel like you've probably answered this one, but we'll do it anyway. leisure. What does taking time out just for you look like?
Yeah, it's rock climbing. It's reading good fiction and music. I play a bunch of instruments and sing, and I love to do all of those.
Love that. Relationships. What's one piece of advice that you would give to maintain good relationships in life?
Be curious. Always be curious about, you know, even people you've known all your life. I was just at actually one of my clients' weddings, and he, in his vows, he said, "I vow to always be curious about you." And like, that is like the best thing for a human, is that, wow, someone's genuinely interested in what's going on inside my head and what I care about. And that's how you form relationships. Or that's how you start, at least, is that. So stay curious about everything, especially the people you care about the most.
Love that. Career. What is one thing that you could attribute your career success to?
I have an unshakable belief in myself. I've always believed that, you know, if someone's going to hit it big, it might as well be me. And, you know, I've failed and fallen so many times. And the reason I haven't quit yet is because I believe in myself too damn much to quit. I can't let myself do it because I know I can. And that, like, that's kept me going through, you know, being broke, having crappy side jobs. It's gotten me through breakups, blown sales calls, all of that. I believe in myself so much that I know all I have to do is keep going.
I love that. That's amazing. Imagine there's a lot of people out there listening that wish they could do the same. So that's cool that you're spreading it and helping people feel like that. Finally, finance. What is the best way to make your money work for you?
Specificity. I often work through money relationships with my clients, because that does often cause procrastination. And 9 times out of 10, the action item is for them to create a budget. Because they don't know how much they're spending, they don't know all their expenses, they have a goal, like a, you know, a travel goal, but they don't know how much it's going to cost. And what they're actually afraid of is the uncertainty of it. And that's like the worst position you can put a human in, is an uncertain one. We hate that as a rule. Mm-hmm. And creating certainty removes the fear. So something as simple as making a budget for yourself, so that you actually know how much money you're spending and how much money you need to do whatever it is that you want to do, will immediately, even before the budget's made, just knowing that you're going to do that is going to feel relaxing. So make the budget and keep looking at it. Because I know for me, anytime I've felt stress around finances, I go and actually look at my bank account and I go, oh, it wasn't actually as this is fine.
Yeah.
This is great. I'll cover everything and then some. This will be fine. But before I looked, when I didn't know, that's when I was going, oh, do I have enough money? But then I looked and it was like, oh, okay, this is great. So you have to actually look at it and then create a specific budget so that you actually know what you need.
Yeah. I love that. Ben, you're awesome, dude. I think like there's so much optimism and I love it. I think, you know, sometimes, you know, the podcast, we do have these conversations that can be difficult and they can be quite tough sometimes, but yeah, I think your whole outlook on things is infectious and it's great. Where can people go if they want to, get more from you?
Yeah. So you can follow me on Instagram at BenJoyWalker, all one word. And if you're in the US and you like rock climbing, shoot me a DM and let's climb together. I may be coming to your crag.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, Ben, thanks so much for coming on again. I think there's a lot of value in everything you've said. Really appreciate your time. Thanks to all of you for listening. And we will see you guys for the next one.